Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive.
Hey everyone, welcome to the America's Jobs Team. I'm Carla Soans, and I am really excited about today's conversation. With us today, you might recognize a familiar friend in the business. Michael Katze is here with us today, and he serves as Economic Development Manager for Tacoma Public Utilities. And Michael, I am sure that it's been a journey to land where you are, as most economic developers, you know, kind of have a winding trail to get to their current role. Can you kind of walk us through the journey that you've taken to get into economic development, as well as kind of what you do in your current role with the utilities?
Sure, be happy to. Yeah, like I think, you know, every economic developer has their origin story, and they're all different. I don't think any of us come into it pretty well the same way. Where would I start? So I left Australia back in 89 just to do what I thought would be a five-year world trip, sort of go around, explore the world, and then get on with my life when I got back there. And that trip took me to a little town in Alaska where I got some seasonal work. And it was nice because I could work 6 months, and then it allowed me to travel for 6 months. So I did that for probably the next 10 or 12 years. And it's one of those things that where I never sort of moved to Alaska. I just kind of never left. at the end of that, sort of towards the, sort of after being there for 13 years, it was time to start looking for year-round work, not seasonal work. Daughter was getting ready to go to school, and you know, we probably needed to buy a house and all that sort of stuff. So I needed a real life. One of the things I started doing was working for the local tribe as an environmental specialist. And at the same time, the city had sort of disbanded its Economic Development Commission and sort of zeroed out its economic development budget because the economic development manager that they had hired didn't turn out to be good. And it's one way to get to move her on and move to a different form of economic development for the city. And they basically allowed for the creation of a nonprofit, which they would fund. And it was run by a board for quite a while before they started looking for an executive director to take over. I'd been at the tribe for a while, and then they approached me about doing this work. And I told them, you know, I don't think so. I've got a great job. And I don't even know what this economic development is that you talk about. You know, it was one of those things that you hear, but you don't really think much about. And I said, I don't have a degree in economics, you know, so I'm not really qualified probably to do the job. And so they left it at that. I said, no, I just kept doing my job. And they came back about 3 or 4 months later and said, you know, we really want you to do this job. And I said, okay, what is it that you want me to do? And they kind of laid out what it was they expected of me. And I thought, oh, well, I can do that. And so I basically became the first executive director of that organization. And I had to find an office. I had to find furniture. I sort of put the whole thing together from scratch. And then sort of really took to turning what had been a, you know, sort of an amateur volunteer economic development effort within the city into more a professional side of. And I first thing I did was when I got the job was I looked up economic development and tried to work out, you know, what it was, what my goal was at the end of the day. And so I was there for 4 years doing that. And I really loved it. I struggled through the first couple of years on my own, just trying to work out what it was I was doing and how to fit in. And, started taking classes through IEDC and taught and connecting with economic developers around the state, and really just fell into it. I just really, really love economic. It was one of the jobs that I'd come across that I just fell in love with. And from there, I moved from there to Anchorage to take on the executive director position at a regional economic development organization. And again, that was further expanding my efforts, was going from local economic development to regional, to a region I hadn't been to before. And, you know, the region in Alaska, when you talk about areas, that it's sort of different scale. My charge was an area somewhere between Michigan and Oregon. So, you know, my jurisdiction was larger than, I think, 39 states in the US. So you have a situation where you have, like, you know, 55 communities spread across that entire region, and there wasn't a road between them. So you got everywhere by flying and taking boats and stuff like that. And commercial fishing in that region is the major industry. And I was doing that for quite a while, and I really started to just, again, expand my knowledge of economic development in different industries. And I got a call from the state's Development Finance Authority asking me to come over and sort of take on a new position there as a business development director, and something they hadn't done before. They were sort of more of a passive organization, and they wanted someone to sort of go out and hustle a little bit and sort of be that single point of contact for people who were interested in getting economic development projects financed. And so that was interesting too, because I didn't know anything about the finance side of economic development. To be thrust into a finance development organization was a real learning period. And I really enjoyed my 9 years there and really expanded what I knew about economic development. And then it was just, you know, after 29 winters in Alaska or whatever, you know, it was time to go. It was time mm-hmm. to move on to something else and move closer to our daughter, who moved to Vancouver, BC, and in Canada, and go to school. And so this position came up and was lucky to get it, and we feel privileged to be where I am right now. And utilities, had I known what I didn't know, if I knew what I didn't know, I probably wouldn't have taken the position. Extremely complex stuff when you start working within a utility environment. And had I known that, I may have said, it's way too much for me, but I'm loving it. I'm just jumping into this and just absolutely loving learning about power, water. And we also have a short line rail service that services the Port of Tacoma and works sort of the transition between moving goods from ships to Class 1 rail lines in the country. So yeah, it's great. And so it has been a long journey, and it's also been one of just increasing knowledge and looking at the different perspectives that economic development brings, which is, of course, one of the things I love about economic development.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit more, because as you were kind of talking about your journey, it just struck me that, you know, you moved from Australia to Alaska, kind of did your thing for a while. And it's so funny to me how many economic developers are kind of like picked out by somebody who says, I think that's our guy or our girl right there. And when approached, they're like, what? Like, what is economic development? So I love that your kind of authentic answer of like, I'm Googling, like, what is this? And to just hear that theme throughout every position you've mm-hmm. taken, it sounds like there's always that theme of, I learned a lot, like I had to learn a lot. And you're just kind of, it's easy to see that you're kind of a lifelong learner of like, I get a yep. lot of enjoyment out of kind of learning and self-learning how to do those things. When you think about mentors, because I know in many of those different roles, you went from a municipality or working with the tribe all the way to like a regional group. Now you're with a utility. What role have mentors played as you've made those significant career moves? And, you know, can you talk a little bit about how you've maybe utilized mentors to enhance some of that learning that's been so important for you?
Yeah, that's such a mentors and learning from, you know, the people around you is always fascinating to me. Because I think there's the two sort of different types of mentors. There's the unintentional mentor who actually has an influence and on you that often you don't know, and often they will never know. And they, you know, you're able to model behaviors and attitudes from someone that you see, and you see what they're doing. You go, wow, I really appreciate what they're doing, and you model that within yourself. And sometimes, again, like I said, you don't know till years later, and you go, oh yeah, I remember. Now I know why I did that, because so and so was doing it. And so that sort of subliminal mentoring is really critical, because I think it is part of our lives, and often we don't know just how much of part of our lives it is. But then there are those sort of intentional mentors, you know, people you reach out to, or people who just kind of take you under their wing. And I think what I appreciate the most is they're often the people who will give you the chance to fail. And fail on your own terms, and then be there to sort of help you work through the issues at hand and then move on to, you know, sort of learn from that and then and sort of see growth from it. And I think that was part of that first job for me, was just the fact that, you know, this sort of the board, a couple of members of the board that originally hired me to start Economic Development, it's just really had enough faith in me to take on something I had no idea I was what I was supposed to be doing. And they just saw something in me that I didn't. And they sort of gave me the latitude and said, hey, just go with it. And they didn't dictate. They didn't prescribe what I needed to do. They kind of gave me a broad outline and said, just do it. And then that's kind of what happened. And that's and I've always really appreciated that ability to sort of, well, that permission to just go and fail and learn and fail and learn and sort of fail forward is what I like to say, is, you know, so you're always learning something. And then several years back, I had, again, so sometimes you question your, you know, your own leadership, or you wonder why things happen the way they do. And I've always found myself in leadership positions, and it's always been this place where I end up at with when I had no intention of getting there. You know, I ended up on a path that I didn't put myself on. It just seems to have opened up for me, or someone's put me there. So I've often seen I haven't seen the leadership qualities within me. Mm-hmm. And I was working with a mentor a couple of years back, and she helped me explore leadership in terms of just leadership in general, and then helped me look at leadership, you know, look at myself through a leadership lens. And it was there that we sort of worked out, well, I do have leadership qualities. I just never recognized them before. And I end up where I am because of a reason. And I'm often there because other people believe I need. And so I would often question, why am I here? Why am I at this table with all these amazing people? What am I doing here? And she helped me really look at myself through that lens. And I don't ask myself anymore, why am I here? I'm here because other people want me to be here, and I accept that and I acknowledge that. And I'm at the table and I do whatever I can to add value to the conversation. And so it's been really critical because it's changed the way I show up. You know, and I think half of what we do is about how we show up, and that's been really critical to me.
I want to talk a little bit. You when you were talking about mentors, you said one of the things that you've really appreciated about those mentors is their ability to kind of let you fail and to help you get things back on the rails and to experiment a little bit. And failure is sometimes something that leaders, you know, shy away from talking about. But I firmly believe that people learn a lot by hearing about other people's tough lessons. So is there a lesson that you can recall maybe in your earlier years as an economic developer, or maybe it's recent, where you were like, man, like that was something that I didn't see coming, wish I would have done it differently. Like, what's kind of a tough lesson that you've had to learn in your career that maybe somebody else listening to could learn from?
Yeah, interesting question. I think what I learned was the value of collaboration and the value of cooperation. I've always liked to see myself, and I think most of us do, as independent people. We don't want to rely on others for what, you know, how we do. We want to be self-sufficient. We want to be independent. And I always saw myself as that sort of a person. So when I started economic development, I put my head down and I just went for it, you know, and I just did what I did for the first 2 years pretty well without any sort of external validation or anything. Or even reaching out to people outside. And after 2 years, I thought, you know what? I wonder if I'm even doing economic development. I wonder if I'm doing it the right way. And I started looking into things, and I noticed, you know, the IEDC classes. So I went and did an IEDC basic economic development class, and was just blown away. And was just blown away at the depth of economic and the breadth of economic development, all the things that you really needed to know. And I hadn't gotten that. I really missed that bit. And so when I got back to town, I started reaching out to economic developers around the state and in my region and around. And for the next 2 years, I really spent a lot of time just learning about economic development from other people and from IEDC and doing classes and things like that. So that was really critical for me, is learning that even if you can do things on your own, that's usually not the best way to do it. and especially in economic development. I also happened to serve two terms on the city council, and I went in thinking, you know, I have an idea. I think it's a good idea for the community, and then you just say it, and then, you know, everyone goes along with you. But I think what I learned pretty quickly was is that I'm only one vote.
Yep.
And so unless I can bring three others to the table and get them to agree with me, then I wasn't going to get anything done. So that was something I learned very early on in just being a city council member, was that, yeah, I can't do it on my own. So I learned to think of good ideas, then run it by the other members to see what they thought could be improved. And when it was finally brought out, I had at least some consensus and some sort of knowledge of what it was I was trying to do. And then I needed to pitch it. But I can't do it on your own. And I think even if you can, you shouldn't.
I have a couple more questions to ping your way. One of them, I want to get to how your community has kind of responded to everything that's happened in 2020. But before we go there, I want to continue talking just briefly about your leadership. And I can tell that you're still really excited about economic development and really passionate about it. And as you know, it's kind of a relentless job. Like, there's always something to do. You know, there's like always different hurdles and different barriers that you're trying to overcome. And so how do you, when you're knee deep into a project and things aren't going so well, how do you kind of recharge your own battery so that you can show up and be fully present in the work that you're doing on behalf of the communities that you serve?
Yeah. In general, I recharge just by taking time to myself and just enveloping myself in something else that just distracts me from whatever I do. And doesn't matter what it is, just take some time off, relax. But, you know, in sort of on a bigger scale, I love to travel. So for me, getting out and seeing new things, it just excites me and recharges my inner desires for just learning more about the world that I live in. And of course, COVID has put a sort of a stop on that a little bit. But yeah, generally just taking a step back when you have those projects and those issues that come up, just stop, just take a step back, walk away from it, distract yourself, do something else for a little bit. And then while you're doing that, consciously, subconsciously, your brain is pondering these issues and these questions. And often if you can just distract yourself long enough, you'll work it out. It will come to you and you go, That's what I need to do. And that's sort of, in many respects, how I've been recharging is just taking a step back.
I love that answer. And I know that you're not alone in, you know, travel being something that not only really recharges people, but also kind of is that it opens your imagination up to kind of think of things in a new way. So a lot of the most creative people I know really traveled quite a bit because they... Yeah. And in those journeys and in those trips, they thought of new ideas and thought of different ways to do things. And so it certainly has been really hard.
and that's the interesting thing. That's one of the biggest things I found about traveling. And my wife and I traveled around the world in all sorts of different places. And is that there's more than one way to do something. And you don't know that until you step outside your culture or your area. Then you can start to see that other people are having the same results by doing different things. And it sort of allows you to not get tunnel vision on something. You know, you can actually be adaptable and you can take ideas from different areas and put them together. And I love that. I mean, I think that was probably the one thing I learned more than anything was that, hey, there's more than one way to skin a cat, even the old saying. But it really is. And you can bring all that knowledge together. And I've done a lot of different jobs over my life. And so you bring the knowledge of that as well. And I love that part of it, that you can actually draw from so many different areas of your life and areas of the world and come into some bringing, because you need to be creative in economic development, right?
Yeah.
It's a science and yet it's an art, and it's the art that really makes the difference. And being able to take that science and those rules and stuff and those ideas and actually put them together in such a way that's unique for every single project and every issue that you deal with, I think that's really the critical point.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I know I said we'd have one more question, and it kind of goes along with what you're talking about. We have an opportunity to see lots of things happening around the country right now and around the globe, to be honest. What is something, when you think about, you know, when you kind of think hyper-local to where you live right now, what's something that has made you really proud in terms of how your community has been able to respond to kind of the wrecking ball of 2020, as many people refer to it? What's something that you, when you think about your, you know, kind of hyper-local region, what's something that makes you proud?
Yeah, a couple of things. One was really tied to COVID. And, you know, we're just south of Seattle and Kirkland, where, you know, the first US case of COVID was noted in January, and then the first death in February. And then Seattle, King County, and Snohomish, so just north of us, had a huge uptick in cases very early on, sort of before the rest of the country. And yet we're just, you know, 30 miles south, the next county south of that area. And we were able to maintain a very low level of infection and deaths early on. And I think part of that was because we recognized the dangers and the threats at hand. And so the county really went into sort of a lockdown mode and prescribed, sort of followed the scientists or the doctors, you know, the CDC in that. And I think that really made a huge difference in the fact that they, you know, were masking up. We were sort of asked to mask up and to sort of keep some sort of physical distance. And I think that was crucial to be able to keeping the infection in check for quite a while. I mean, it was months later that until we really started taking off on numbers. And but we've still never sort of gone back on phase two in terms of reopening. Mm-hmm. But we're following, you know, science and sort of the scientific prescriptions for it. The other thing too is in regards to the Black Lives Matter movement, is the fact that a lot of entities in this county, in this area, including the city and the Tacoma Public Utilities and the Chamber and Regional Economic Development Organizations, have all taken the call to diversity, equity, and inclusivity seriously. And they've started to look at their board structures. They've started to have dialogues with BIPOC populations. And they've started to look at ways in which they can move forward and becoming more reflective of the community that we live. And not only that, they're also looking at really taking that next step and becoming anti-racist organizations, where they will actually fight the systemic and institutional racism and discrimination that's been going on for so long in our areas. So I think I'm really proud of that. I think they've taken it on, and they're not shied away from it. They're not scared to talk about it, and they've opened up channels for dialogue, because I think dialogue is something that's really going to get us through. And I think one of the first steps they did was actually acknowledge that there is a problem, and then sort of said, we want to do something about it. So I think in those two areas, in terms of COVID response and then sort of in a response to the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm really proud of what we've accomplished here in Tacoma and Pierce County.
Well, those are certainly two incredible things to be proud of. And it's I'm glad that you shared those. I know that a lot of communities have had great responses to both issues, but it's always great to hear what communities are doing. And I appreciate your thoughts on that and just what your organization is doing to impact that movement. So I know we promised you a short interview, and I really, really appreciate your time and your energy that you put into today and just your story. I just want to thank you for being a part of our podcast. I know you have a lot of things going on that you could be doing, but we certainly enjoyed having you today and just learning from you and certainly sharing your story again, all the way from Australia, you know, now to Alaska, back to the United States with the rest of the world that listens to the podcast. So thank you so much for being with us today. And we hope to see you at some point in person soon.
Yep, that'd be great. Thank you very much for having me. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey everyone, I'm here today with Steve Jast, who is the president and founder of Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Hey Steve, it's great to speak with you today. As one of the leading voices in investment attraction and lead generation, what has stuck out the most for you over the past few months?
Hi, Faye. Thanks so much for the question. First and foremost, let me say that I love the content that Consultant Connect has been generating. I'd also like to take a second to wish all of our listeners continued good health. Every day is really a new adventure. We're seeing some sad stories of industries and companies in steep, unexpected decline, and we're also seeing areas of growth and opportunity. A couple of areas that have generated significant strategic discussions center around supply chain and reshoring. To help economic developers blend these into their strategic plans moving forward, we've been providing complementary data pulls and access to our Gazelle AI platform.
That's really awesome, Steve. I'm sure this data has helped many economic development organizations. Can you explain how exactly Gazelle AI helps?
Sure. Yeah, great question, Faye. Our platform includes supply chain data for over 900 industries with related company listings. We also have complete company hierarchies, meaning users can build lists of companies that have an HQ in a specific state or country with manufacturing activities in other specific countries. This is ideal for economic recovery planning, reshoring business attraction strategies, understanding local supply chains, and overall investment attraction.
Wow, thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone, if you would like to activate your complimentary access to Gazelle AI, connect with Steve by emailing him at Steve, S-T-E-V-E, at gazelle.ai. That's Steve at gazelle.ai. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.